going on, patrons? This is Lawrence from More to That, and I'm here to just record a quick audio post on my latest piece, How Money Forever Changed Us. So what is this going to be about? I mean, at this point, if you haven't read the post, please do so. Otherwise, all this stuff just isn't going to really make sense. I'm not going to reiterate things that I've already discussed, but more so, I just wanted to talk about what were some of the things that led me to even write this post in the first place. Why was I so curious about the philosophical underpinnings of money, the structure of money? How has it become what it is now? And I think those are the things that hopefully you might find a little bit useful, and the things that I could add a little bit of value to while recording this kind of free form. So why was I interested in this topic in the first place? So in February, I wrote a post called Money is the Megaphone of Identity, where it was basically like a post about financial freedom in a way without really using that topic as a grounding for it. But it was just about how we frame our relationship with money. Very simple. So three main phases: survival, freedom, and power. And what does it mean to be in each of those phases? And how does money allow us to represent our position within those phases? And I'm happy with how that post turned out. So the thing about posts of this nature is there's an assumption that money is something that we all desire, right? It's not very controversial. And it's a thing that has provides us with a certain standard of life, enables to do all sorts of things in life. It's the glue that moves humanity and the shared language that we all speak. So I wanted to take a step back from that. I find that any types of discussions of philosophy or psychology is all about taking one step back and zooming out and looking at some of the underlying assumptions behind some of the work that you've already done, right? So I wanted to take a look at, okay, wait, why is money what it even is in the first place? Like, how has money become this thing that has determined value for all of us? And the more I think about it, how has that even happened, right? Money in itself, especially in its current form, has no intrinsic value. Right. And this is something that I joke around a lot about, you know, with a friend of mine, where when he says he has to go to work, I just say, hey, you're getting them digits in your bank account, right? And he's like, yeah, I got to go get them numbers, because that's all money really is. Right. It's at this point, it's just digits on a screen that are passed from one node to another, one person to another. And, you know, if you rewind 20 years ago, right, like before the internet really was a ubiquitous phenomenon, you had credit cards, checks. I mean, these are pieces of paper and plastic that are worthless on its own. It has no intrinsic value, but we use it as the vehicle to distribute the value. And then you rewind further back from that, and then we have like cash and the banknote. Rewind a little bit more, you have precious metal coins in Mesopotamia. And then all the way in the beginning, the first iteration of money was in Sumer in the form of barley grains. So, but in the initial stages, those formats of money had some sort of tangible value, right? Barley you could eat, so that has some sort of inherent biological value. Precious metals, yeah, you can't eat them, but they were always historically used as some sort of signaling good. So it had cultural intrinsic value. But as we started moving onward, a lot of that intrinsic value started being lost, right? Cash has no intrinsic value. If you wear paper, you're probably just, you know, homeless. And like, it's not that cool to be wearing paper. Plastic, it's just, you know, it just is what it is. But then we have still been able to consolidate these forms of money in these interesting ways. So money, as we move further along toward modernity, loses all notion of tangible intrinsic value, and instead, the value has become purely ethereal, right? It's become simply a concept in the mind. And how do we reconcile that? How do what does that do when we have an abstraction like that? And this is what I call it the great abstraction, the movement of any intrinsic value away from the tangible into the completely intangible. And how does that work in our psyches, right? That has to be something that's quite confusing when you completely divorce what you can see, what you can feel, what you can, you know, wear, touch, into something that lives purely in the mind. And that was the question that I wanted to explore further in this post. So if you read it, then you'll be able to see what exactly came out of that analysis. It's a 7,000 word analysis into that essential thing. But I feel that that is really the linchpin of a lot of the discussions of money. So the other thing that I was curious about in exploring further is the notion that money cannot buy happiness. So this is obviously timeless wisdom. It's something that we take as platitude, and platitudes always have some sort of grain of truth into them. So we have to make sure that we don't take that with a grain of salt. But I feel that I always felt that there was something deeper to the notion of money can't buy happiness, right? Because the only way to counteract money can't buy happiness, right? The equally relevant truth that's on the other side is money can't buy happiness, but it can buy the freedom required to buy happiness. And I think that sentence encapsulates what money can do for us. But I don't think that's quite it either. I find that, and this is what I really want to delve deeper with this post about, how money cannot be an end good in itself. Because it can't be a final good in itself, that's why it can't buy us happiness. So, and the reason why it can't be the final good in itself is because of the great abstraction. Because the great abstraction took away all notions of intrinsic value from money. When you look at it like that, it becomes much more clear why money cannot be the final goal. It's worthless on its own. It has no sense of reality attached to it, right? And this is just like when you, let's say you're in Spain, of course, pre-COVID, right? Like you're in a foreign country, you're just doing your thing. You do currency exchange, you have all this money, you're going out, getting stuff, and things are great. And then like you come back home, and then you look in your wallet and then you see all the cash from Spain in there. And then the first thing you think is, ah, fuck, I didn't exchange it out before I left. Now I'm going to get crushed on the exchange rate. Like, you just start seeing these pieces of paper that just 2 days ago when you were in Spain were so valuable. And now you just want to get them out of your hands. You'll be willing to pay some shitty ass exchange rate just to get them back in dollar format. Like, that bit of disconnection you have with money, that I think is a microcosm of what it feels like if money were the final good in your life or the final end in your life. It's this realization that, holy shit, this doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't do anything for me. I don't even really want this around. So, you know, of course, though, it's a temporary feeling. But if money were the final good throughout your life, I think that's the inevitable place you'll find yourself, because money has no intrinsic value. It's been abstracted out to something purely in the mind, and it only can do what we assign it to do. So that statement right there, I think, required a lot of untangling and a lot of simplification, and obviously a lot of pop culture references, which I did in the post. And I also wanted to just break down the tension that creates within us. So I introduced George Simmel's work on the philosophy of money and how this has allowed us to both break down and rebuild individuality, all these various nodes. But the crucial component here is just understanding how we've abstracted money as a concept that lives purely in the mind, and also what it's like to have that, where that money can never be a final good in itself or end in itself. Once these two topics were settled, then I was able to go deeper into how money impacts our behaviors in the context of a modernized world, which is where Simmel's work really helps out. And Simmel wrote his, he published The Philosophy of Money in 1900. Like, this was before the internet, you know, way before like fucking Bitcoin and all this shit. But it's amazingly, it's compelling. It's very compelling and it's poignant in today's era. And one thing he was able to do was just kind of forecast and predict how technology would just further serve to accelerate how we would use money to define our role in life and our and the way that we view things in the in terms of calculable trade-offs and viewing everything in the form of an income and so forth. So there was a lot of great things that I picked up from Simmel's work. So all this together just kind of all fit in to create this post here. And, you know, when it comes to my reflection on whenever I finish something of this nature, especially something so long, it's hard to really say because I don't have, a lot of these things aren't definitive answers to anything. Like, I've always believed that more often than not, the pursuit of the question is far more interesting than the answer. Because the answer tries to put a doorstop to your curiosity, right? It says that, okay, this is what we are going to present as truth. And this is what we are going to decide and agree on what is the truth now. So it almost says that, all right, we've already figured this out and let's just kind of close this door and we'll look elsewhere for some other things. But it's never quite like that, right? Especially with something like money. And what's amazing to me is that there are entire industries, there are entire groups of people that tackle money in different ways, right? There's folks that comment on the stock market, and there's folks that just talk about how you can live with less and just this, you know, the psychological components of money and all this stuff, right? But there is something just fundamental about the core of what money is that I don't think we'll ever really figure out. This has just been one of those things where it has continued to evolve, it has continued to shift, it has continued to change. But there's something deep within the philosophical component of it that leads to a lot of the struggles and issues that we have with these concepts. And, you know, this abstraction of money is just going to get further and further and further complex, right? With cryptocurrencies and all the things that are trying to essentially change the way that we view money. But at its core, as long as money is what we do or what we use to satisfy all of our means to our ends, then we're always going to have this conflict of money can't buy you happiness. That's going to always exist as long as we chase money with the understanding that money can never be the final end. So that's not the answer. That's just a reflection. That's just a thing to ponder, which is why I end the post with the kind of series of paradoxes that no matter how you view money, no matter how which end you view it as, it's true. There is truth to both sides, right? The able man must pursue money, but the dying man will regret that he ever did. Both perspectives are true. So it's about balancing that as much as possible and understanding where you find yourself within this paradox. And the way that I ended it was, it was just a way of once again reemphasizing that perhaps the one principle that we can actually use and rely on and have some semblance of middle ground between these two diametrically opposed truths is the concept of enough. And it may seem like a platitude, but as I said earlier, platitudes contain big kernels of truth. It's just more about how you came across that platitude that is the question. So knowing that I think it when it comes to our struggles with money, it really comes down to that. To that one concept. And we're going to always further explore what it means to have enough. We're going to continue to explore what it means to achieve financial freedom and to not have it, and to oscillate between the two, how we find ourselves positioning ourselves with money, what it brings out in us, our behaviors. These are all things that don't have an end. But the best thing we can do is just ask good questions. All right, so that's it. That's it for the reflection. I hope that this gave you some food for thought. And thank you so much for your support. It's truly, truly appreciated. And this is, yeah, I'm just grateful that you are here with me on this journey. So thank you.